before their hashtags.
A dissection of pop culture past.
With Eric Dallinger.
And Carlianna Billings.
Each week we hop in our time machine and take a look at the past of pop culture. Hello everybody and welcome to the Before There Were Hashtags podcast. I am here with my wonderful co-host, Miss Carly Ann Billings.
That's me.
I am Eric Dallinger.
That's you.
And we are so excited to be with you this week talking about pop culture history.
Woohoo! Yes, we love doing it every week. And you know what? This week is like every other so far.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. We love a routine.
We're on podcast number 3 there, Miss Carly.
Hey, once is a fluke. Twice is, you know, something you're doing 3 times. That's a habit. So
it's a holy trinity.
We're a habit, baby.
Or an unholy trinity.
More like it.
Well, we have tons to talk about today. This podcast could be a strange one for us.
Yeah, this is a juicy topic. This is unlike any other of the 2 topics we've talked about thus far. It's a bit of a wider scope. It's a doozy. It's a good one. One that I personally haven't thought much about until we decided to do it as a topic. And I was like, holy heck, I never realized how formative this topic was, you know, just in life.
So. Yes. So today we are going to be talking about the 2008 housing market bubble burst.
Yes.
The great recession of our lifetime.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. That doesn't sound much fun there, Miss Carly.
It sounds super freaking dark. But I mean, like everything, out of the darkness rises the phoenix from the ashes. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the changes that whole shebang brought about, especially, at least on my end, in the realm of one of my favorite things, television and media. But we also, before we get to that, obviously, I'm getting ahead of ourselves. We have to, of course, talk about the topic. And before we talk about the topic, we have to, you know, before we hop back in time, we got to gas up our time machine, right, Eric?
Gas up the time machine
in order to get there.
And Miss Carly, how do we gas up that said time machine?
We like to talk. Chatter is a lot of energy, and energy gives us time to gas it on up. So what we're going to be doing as we gas up our time machine, we're going to set the timer for exactly 5 minutes, so that we have 5 minutes to talk about current day pop culture, because that's not what this podcast is about. It's about the time before there were hashtags. But in order to go back in time, let's take a chance and talk about the present for just a hot sec.
All right, I am going to start my timer.
Yes.
In 3, 2, 1. All right, so I think the biggest thing at the current recording of this podcast that's been going on is the Oprah Winfrey interview with the Duchess of Cambridge.
Oh, huge.
Or Sussex. Oh my goodness. Which one are they?
What?
Are they?
Are they not? Or are they something
Cambridge
else?
Or Sussex?
Oh. I don't know. She's a duchess of some kind.
She is a duchess. Meghan Markle.
But they're no longer working members of the royal family. Haven't been for about a year now.
No.
Of course, everybody knows we're talking about Meghan Markle and Prince Harry. So.
Yeah. Just, it was really sad listening to the interview, if I'm honest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are we really surprised there was racism in the royal family?
We already knew
surprise,
that there was.
Surprise.
Like, I'm sorry, imperialism is bad and racist? Question mark.
A family that's built their back on colonialism.
Like, we all know that to be true. But I think it was hard for a lot of people to hear that it is still such a rampant an important topic. I think with when Meghan married into the family, a lot of people thought, oh, this is a symbol, this is a time when things are changing, things maybe are finally being different. And then hearing otherwise in the Oprah interview was, I think, disheartening for a lot of people. It was, I mean, disheartening for me. I, in the past and currently, I mean, like, I love the idea of the royals. Like, it's such an interesting, dynamic, luxurious thing, but like, no, in practice, obviously, and in real life, it's terrible and horrible, and I mean, brought about the destruction of, you know, everything for a lot of people. But I think for a lot of people, people like, this is such an institution that people have forgotten that sometimes the people within these institutions are people and can still have their own views, even if outwardly the view has been recently that everything's fine, we're not racist. Clearly that's not the case in the interior. So
yeah. That was unfortunate. And yeah. It was also really sad for me to hear about her mental health. Mental health has been a big battle, I think, for both of us. So
absolutely.
I think it was really, really brave of Meghan Markle for talking about it and being open about it. But at the same time, it's really sad that she was really shut down while she was a part of the firm, as they called it. And they didn't want to talk about her. They didn't let her take care of her suicidal thoughts. So I was really happy to hear her talk openly about that. But I'm really sad that it happened in the first place.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think she's really making lemons out of lemonade in that way, where she's taking this opportunity to talk about mental health in such an open and honest and important way. But yeah, of course she had to go through that terrible hardship in order to be able to talk about it, which is shite and shouldn't have happened in the first place. You're absolutely right. I also think it's really interesting the way that people have, like, I guess it also happened, this whole thing happened also around International Women's Day, and like in the media a lot of folks are talking about like women's safety. There's just been a lot of women talk in the media, let's say, recently, this week specifically, and it's been really interesting to see how drastic some people can take a stance one way or the other. And it's like, to me, I don't know. Very interesting.
Well, I thought it was interesting just within the royal family how they, like, they looked at their popularity amongst different age groups and who people sided with.
Yeah.
And that older people generally sided with the Queen and the firm, and younger people tend to identify more with Harry and Meghan. So it just shows that there is a real generational gap between okay boomers and
yes. Yeah, and I guess it's a hopeful thing too that, like, the future is changing and the change is happening now. So it's pretty
yes,
it's
of
neat
course,
to see that.
Of course. And we have 30 seconds left, so I just want to briefly touch on the Grammys that happened.
Oh, Grammys!
Grammys, people are not happy. ARMYs are not happy. BTS ARMY is not happy. Mm-hmm. They lost the Grammy.
The Weeknd's boycotting it. It's everything.
To be honest, I don't think Dynamite was a winning song. I love BTS. I think I'm more mad because they should have been nominated previously because their work is so good and
so
grand.
Good.
And
I'm a Taylor Swift stan, so I'm so happy that she won. I just think her work this past year has been her best work yet, which is, like, incredible.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we are folklore stans.
We are full folklore stans. Yeah, so.
We made... Oh,
oh,
that's it. Oh. I was going to talk about Pumpkin Day, but it will have to wait.
Oh, one day they will hear about our Pumpkin Day.
Oh my God.
But for now, our time machine's gassed up, ready to head to the past, ready to head back to a time before there were hashtags.
Blasting off.
Woohoo!
All right, so we are going back to 2008. Well, we might be going a little into 2007, into 2009.
Yeah.
But that general time.
Era.
So I just want to set the scene, Miss Carly, and let people know what in pop culture was happening around that time. So the hit songs of 2008 were Seven Things by Miley Cyrus.
Iconic. I remember listening to that song as I walked into Justice and Limited 2, just searching and... buying up, you know, accessories that I didn't need. 10 for 10 sale. Oh, love it.
4 minutes by JT and Madonna.
Wow. A throwback.
Poker Face had just come out. Lady Gaga was a baby. Oh. She was a baby Gaga.
Baby Gaga. Yeah, Poker Face was her first, like, big hit after Just Dance. That's amazing.
We have Burning Up by the Joe Bros.
Oh,
Single
iconic.
Ladies came out. Single Ladies
Whoa.
Came out.
That is a pillar, a titan.
Low by T-Pain.
Oh, and, yeah. Shorty Got Low.
When I Grow Up by
Podcast
Darlings.
Episode
PCD.
One. That's
and
right.
And one that, like, a little throwback. I don't know if people would think about this, but American Boy by Estelle featuring Kanye West.
Ooh.
Came out in 2008.
Yeah.
And movies that came out in 2008 include WALL-E, Mamma Mia, and Twilight.
Oh, incredible. And I'm pretty sure I saw all three of those in theaters back in the day. Because I am a Mamma Mia stan.
Meryl. And, I mean, Meryl's great. We love Meryl.
Sure.
Oh yeah. I guess I speak for myself only on that.
Oh, I was gonna come up, but sooner or later. I don't dislike Meryl Streep. And I'm sure she's a lovely lady. In fact, I know that she's lovely. I just don't understand the hype. I'm just confused by it. It's not for me, and that's okay. Not everything is for you, Carly Billings. That's what I've been learning. So.
What? Not everything's for you.
I know, it's shocking. I know. it's shocking. It's news.
What?
I know.
Life,
not everything
my life
is for
all
me.
About you.
I know. I know that, but the world doesn't. So one day maybe they will. But not today.
All right. So I did want to get started and talk about what the housing crash was. So the housing
of
crash,
course.
I believe, happened around September of 2008. Please correct mm-hmm. me if I'm wrong. So basically,
yeah, it happened around mid September.
Yeah, what was
is when shit really hit the fan.
The finance world was that it was getting really easy to get a mortgage at that time. I don't know, can't relate.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, I can't relate to that. So mortgages were just getting handed out left, right, and center. And so what happens with a mortgage? Oh wait, this is so financial talk. We are now a financial podcast.
Welcome to Managing Your Money with Carly and Eric.
If you defer on a mortgage payment, the bank then owns your house.
Yeah, it forecloses.
Mortgages can be kind of sold. Those mortgage, who holds like the deed to your mortgage can be sold. So investors were buying like these mortgage, I don't even know what they're called, but they were being bought in bulk by companies, by financial institutions.
Yeah, so mortgage-backed securities were bought by up in like the tons and tons by investment banks. Like big old yeah. Wall Street beasts, were out there just buying it up, lapping it up. Giving out mortgages, you're right, to for like low interest rates to folks who ordinarily, maybe in other circumstances, wouldn't qualify for mortgages, as in like they didn't have steady income or they didn't have, you know, they were setting people up to fail essentially at the very end. All that so investment banks can make a lot of money and that their clients could then insure. You could insure credit on a mortgage up to 10 times over. So not only were they making money on the mortgages, but they were making money on the lines of credits and the insured credits. So it's like piles on piles of money. It's basically a lot of like Wall Street loopholes, basically a lot of like big money loopholes. And not only were like the investment banks buying this up, but the government was also buying up a lot of this as well to make money. Which was
This also seemed like a really safe bet because if people mm-hmm. deferred on their mortgages, what would happen is these financial institutions would then own this really great house and they would just resell it. And it seemed like it was kind of foolproof and easy way of making money. But then what happened was so many people couldn't afford these mortgages that it was all being foreclosed on. And so these institutions were then owning all these houses, and because nobody could afford a house anymore, no one was buying them, so they were just sitting
vacant
on these houses which nobody was living in, and then it the bubble burst
totally because the housing market fell because the demand wasn't there for the houses for the sheer amount of properties that were owned by the banks at this point.
Exactly. And this of course sent the stock market into a tailspin, mm-hmm. and we went into what was the worst recession since the Great Depression.
Totally. So, and it was spurred by the Lehman Brothers, which was an investment bank, and it was worth about $600 billion. And middle of September, September 15th of 2008, it went under. It was the biggest bankruptcy in U.S. history. And it was all because of this housing market crash.
But Carly, don't you like sort of wish? No, I don't even want to say it. But it's like a millennial's joke is like we need a housing crash.
We need another housing crash so that we can afford housing. I mean, that's the thing with real estate. Like, a lot of people always go, "Oh, it's the safest bet," and yeah, it's a safe bet if you have longevity. But truthfully, what comes up must come down. That's true with everything, right? There's balance in all things, especially things when it comes to like the economy and housing markets. So there is a point where there's a threshold where people will not be able to afford things or afford to own places at asking. And you know what? The market probably will come down at some point. So there's still hope for us yet, Eric.
I don't want to say fingers crossed because I don't want people to lose their homes, but
absolutely. Of course not.
Affordable housing market.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's another thing. We could always obviously lobby for affordable housing, which we should be doing. Absolutely. And living wage, all these things. They're all intermingled. But essentially, yeah, it was a lot of corporate greed that bankrupted a country, like not a country, but put the market belly up. And a lot of people when things started going bad, folks pulled their money, and when that happens, there's not enough money in the economy to stimulate the economy, so people lost the Dow fell by a third, and then eventually 2 million jobs in the US were lost by the end of the year. And of course their market affects the world market, affects our market in Canada, affects everybody. So
I heard it was described as the death of the middle class.
Yeah.
And I just want to just make sure that we're sourcing ourselves for this more intellectual information. So I got my stuff mostly from Crash Course, which is a great YouTube series. Go check them out.
Love it. I got mine from a great 5-minute video called 2008 Financial Crisis 5 Minutes by The Plain Bagel.
We love
it's a good one. We love it. We love exactly a Crash Course. Dumb it down for us and give us the goods, baby.
Yeah. So in regards to pop culture, I always feel reflects our values as a society. I think in today's world, we're seeing a lot of queer representation in pop culture. We're seeing a lot of Black representation in pop culture, which is awesome because those are values that our current society is, or our young people, I would say, are really moving towards and really trying to uphold, which is an awesome thing. So no wonder the housing crash had an effect on pop culture and all the media we consume. So I watched a really great video called Have We Grown Out of Gossip Girl? Chloe Deschanel. So this video, it's way more extensive than I'm going to get into because the video talks more about the new reboot on HBO Max that's going to be happening, which totally is really exciting. I'm looking forward to it. So, but it talks about how sort of the 2008 housing crash really affected the writers of Gossip Girl and how the show actually really changed from its debut in 2007 over 1 year into 2008 into its second season. So I'm gonna go off on my little tangent here.
Yes, we love a tangent. We love it.
Please jump in at any time if you have any thoughts.
I will.
I sourced myself, so I'm not stealing content here.
No, we love it.
So, Gossip Girl, of course, started in 2007, and it happened kind of right after The OC had ended, because they have, of course, the same creators of Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage. So, they wanted to create a more sophisticated East Coast teen drama. And it's, of course, based off of book series, and the books have been described as sort of a hidden satire on extreme wealth. So in 2007, I would say the culture was of extreme material wealth, and like big hit shows at the time. We had The Hills was really big. My Super Sweet 16. Basically everything on MTV and VH1.
We were also just coming off of like the height of like Sex and the City and a lot of like glamour, high life kind of TV.
When you think of it, like shows like Friends and all of that, like they're supposed to be relatable, but that apartment would be very expensive.
They could never afford.
I also did watch a great video on the stereotype. This is a stereotype of like the Jewish American princess, and they used Friends for both Monica and Rachel because they're just so affluent, but they're so down to earth and so relatable.
Yeah, they're supposed to be like 20 somethings. Like, we're just starting out. You're like, where?
Yeah. So, this is sort of the culture of the show. And so, the first season of the show is like the closest adaptation to the book series. And yeah, it's sort of a satire on extreme wealth. It sort of paints a sort of very two different worlds. You have Dan Humphrey, who's sort of supposed to be middle class. Once again, he's not really. He's upper middle class. He lives in a beautiful loft in Brooklyn. That'd be very, very expensive. He goes to private school. Let's not
middle class, baby.
Actually poor. But by the show standard, he is of our world, and it's meant to show this class divide, and also sort of that these characters in the upper echelon they're not necessarily always the most happy, they're not the most likable, but it is also supposed to be sort of like wealth porn. You know, you see really high end designer labels, you see them eating out at really expensive restaurants. So there's this really sort of showy aspect of it. So 2008 happens, September 2008, and the writers, they have to pivot. So they have two choices. They can go super hardcore into extreme wealth, or they can kind of meet the times. They decide they are going to be the ultimate escape, and they are going to go into like pure lives of the rich and famous. And we really see at this time in season two, they kind of pivot away from Dan and they pivot more towards Blair and Chuck, who are kind of the antagonists of the first season. And they kind of sympathize them. So Chuck is given like a much more sympathetic backstory about his dad, and all to sort of let you forget that like he tried to sexually assault Jenny Humphrey in the first episode of the whole series. And Blair in the first season is sort of somebody who lets her like classism, it's sort of a barrier that she can't get around. It's very hard. And then in the second season, her classism becomes, that's her fun, quirky personality, is that she's a classist.
Oh, that's quirky of her, Blair,
and she's so funny.
She just loves the bourgeoisie. She's so quirky.
So we see this like major shift in the show's tone to be like, yeah, I'm reading a quote that I wrote. They describe her as the lovable classist. It's funny. There's like, she goes to
it's funny.
She goes to NYU, of course, and this could be like a real moment for her character to grow. No, she hates it. She goes to Columbia instead. Spoiler alert. Sorry. That happens later, never mind. Whereas the poor characters are made to look less likable in the second season. So, like, Jenny sleeps with Chuck. Even by the end of the series, the whole moral compass of the show is Dan Humphrey. And if you haven't watched Gossip Girl, please stop listening. But Gossip Girl turns out to be Dan himself. And that's so supposed to be the ultimate betrayal of the middle class, that, you know, the middle class people, they're just as horrible and as awful as the rich people. So it really sort of pivots from being like a satire or a critique of the upper class to just sort of going in soap opera land and letting us enjoy the upper echelons of societies as escapism from our lives. Yeah. So, yeah, during polls and stuff, the poor characters, and I say poor with, like, quotations, because once again, they're not poor.
Yes.
But they, in polls, didn't do as well as, say, Chuck and Blair, who are morally very corrupt.
Yeah. Yeah, from what I remember of that time, everyone loved Chuck and Blair, and everyone was pissed when they revealed who was Gossip Girl, because everyone was like, "Oh my gosh, that's stupid." And I think it was because they were built up to not like these characters.
But the ultimate sort of thing that I read too that was cool was that Dan turns out to be Gossip Girl, but he has no repercussions for it, and he gets rewarded for it by becoming part of the upper class. And that's the whole thing, is basically the upper class doesn't get punished for the wrongdoings. And even just the way it's framed in the first season, like Chuck's sexual assault is considered sort of a obstacle for the more main characters of Jenny and Serena to get around, whereas in the second season and beyond, there's like a whole complaint against Chuck in his hotel that employees are being sexually harassed by Chuck, but it's framed as more of a barrier that he has to get around, all these devious women trying to...
he's just a man in the man's world, and women are everywhere. Yeah. It's so
he's
tough being him.
How dare they?
What is he supposed to do? Yeah, it's very that.
So, I just thought this YouTube video was a really interesting depiction of how, like, a really micro look at how the 2008 crash really affected one TV show in particular.
Totally.
And just like a little side note, do we remember when Hilary Duff was on Gossip Girl for a hot minute and played Olivia Burke?
Oh, yeah. See, I was never like a Gossip Girl stan. I jumped in and out. It was very much how I felt about the OC. I jumped in and out because I knew it was like fun and good to watch, but also I dipped in and out.
Yeah.
Did a lot of that.
No, I loved it.
Remember when Hill was on because we love Queen Hillary.
We love Queen Hillary.
We love.
And she basically played, it was like a Twilight-like series. So she was like the Kristen Stewart.
Yes.
Of the Gossip Girl universe.
Yes.
Hilarious.
So good. So good.
We're going to talk about heavy things, but we also want to, you know, lighten it up by talking about the guest stars of Gossip Girl.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, because, yeah, 2008 was very Twilight-heavy time. That's mostly what I was spending my time doing, is reading Twilight and watching Twilight.
That's pretty much it in terms of Gossip Girl. I have more notes later about how it also goes in the other direction. Not Gossip Girl, but TV goes in the other direction of getting super dark.
Totally.
Super angsty.
Yeah, that's Gossip mostly what my stuff is.
100% escapism.
Yes. Yeah, it is neat that they could have taken one of two routes, and the route they took was to the moon glamour, you know. It is very not contradictory, but it is very contrasting to, like you're saying, the route that a lot of the TV took after 2008. Yeah, based on what was happening around the time, like you said, Eric, I think TV and media in general, but especially TV, we're TV lovers here. TV...
Golden age of TV, renaissance of TV.
Wholeheartedly. TV, like, very much is a good opportunity for writers and, producers and TV makers to reflect, you know, the emotions of the world, the, you know, whatever's out there in the zeitgeist at any given time. And so for me, it is no wonder that instead of the route that the Gossip Girls people took, and I guess they took that route because they had already been established for a year, which makes total sense to take that pivot.
Yeah.
But a lot of the new TV that was coming out in 2008 is kind of what you said, where it took interesting and darker storylines, because I think the audiences were ready for that kind of shift from like your typical, what's it called? Sitcom.
Yes.
Moving away from, like, you know, sitcom. And it was a really... A lot of people consider 2008 really the beginning of the TV renaissance, where, like...
I think we may have read the same article.
I think we did read the same article. I think you might have sent it to me.
Is this the Paste article by Davis Richardson called How 2008 Changed Television?
Oh, baby, you know it. You know that's what this is. So feel free to jump in.
Okay, yes. I'll be able to jump in lots on this because I read the same article.
Absolutely. So, yeah, a lot of people consider that the beginning of the TV renaissance. It's all, like, it's a year that a lot of TV that people know and, like, a lot of long-running shows first premiered. But just before that, so in, like, the 90s and the early 2000s, this was a time when TV started to change in order to set it up for, you know, this full-blown, like, TV change that happens in 2008. Where smaller networks started coming, you know, coming out to play, like HBO, and other networks like FX, etc. And they were doing really interesting things where they were having seasons of TV shows be 13-episode seasons, and a lot of their TV shows being longer episodic, like hour-long episodes instead of half-hour spots. And they were moving away from the traditional network TV model of 22 episodes per season, like half hour model, which is really interesting. It's almost like TV takes on this, and it's the TV that it's also reflecting the TV we see now. I mean, it was really the beginning of like, what is TV, what is movie, where TV takes on a bit of a longer storyline episode to episode, and not just season to season.
Showrunners tended to stay on for much longer and were very much like the head writers, and we see this, whereas in something like Friends you might get new writers every three episodes.
Totally.
So there was less consistency. It was more about changing it up, keeping it interesting, where we now get 13 episodes that really have a through line. They're one person's image. That's, we even think about today's culture and we have like all these cinematic universes, and that's sort of, I think, akin to this, right? People want the established of a universe to be met, and I think we're seeing this in this 13 season long form narrative opposed to really short 30 minute 22 episodes, where like the Friends ages change drastically amongst the seasons. Right, they basically go backwards in time because they start to age out.
Yes,
and that's that old format. Nobody knows when their birthdays are. They celebrate their birthdays
whenever they want.
Whenever they want. Three Christmases go by and they only turn one year.
Yeah,
because that's not what TV was about. It wasn't about long format storytelling. It was about, we're just enjoying it for this half an hour. And now TV's changed this, like,
totally.
I mean, Netflix has an average of 10 episodes per season, but they're really thought out. They're all filmed at the same time, so the consistency of what happens between each episode is 100% there.
Totally. And this is when we start seeing the expectations of not only creators, but audiences changing is with this format, is where audience begin to start to expect like the detail that goes into, say, a longer form narrative structure. And you're totally right. Like, they move away from like comedy writers writing spec scripts for a lot of different writers' rooms, whereas it's just like the few head writers and maybe the writers on staff, and they're always working on the same show and that's all they're doing. It's really different. Like, that's not how it was done, and I know that's how we know it's done today, because the TV we watch, you see the same three creators on every episode, and you see, like, you know, the same names over and over again.
But it also meant a lot of out of work writers.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
All of a sudden, everybody was cycling through before, and now people are just holding on to their jobs for so long and new people can't get in. And we were also seeing at this time, because filming in Hollywood was really expensive, we were seeing pictures being moved away from Hollywood and being filmed in Vancouver and Toronto and
Georgia. Hell yeah.
We see a lot of just like the economy reflecting TV and movies at this time and where they're being filmed. So you can tell that there's probably some frustration in the writer's room about their financial well-being and how that is being portrayed within the TV that we are watching.
Totally. Like, a lot of people, not only writers, but a lot, most, like a big chunk of writers, they left LA because the TV left LA. They were moving away from like studio audience, big studio lots, because there was just too much overhead that they couldn't afford anymore, and it was way cheaper, like you said, to outsource to other places where filming was cheaper, and also you could have like a lot of this TV too. We're remembering that it's like a bit grittier, a bit more like dark. They're looking for not this like Hollywood element. They're looking for this edgy way to create this TV too. And a lot of it is coming from like site specific, you know.
And just to give people some context, TV shows that were sort of premiering around then and also sort of subsequently moving forward were shows like Breaking Bad, which is like majorly a commentary on the healthcare system.
Huge.
The healthcare industry. Yeah. We also have the show Shameless, which is a personal fave, which is sort of all about the inner city of Chicago and sort of poverty and its trappings, how it's really, really hard for people who are in poverty to move out of those systems because of societal pressures, while also being really entertaining. I love Shameless. It's a really cool show. Go watch it.
Yeah, Shameless is great. It's very about, like, the cyclical nature of that.
Yeah. And so there's also Sons of Anarchy was also one that the article mentioned about sort of rural poverty and all that. Jazz. I've never watched Sons of Anarchy, so I can't talk about it.
No, I've never seen Sons of Anarchy either. But these are all, like, staples and long-ass running TV shows. Like, you know, so it just goes to show that, like, the way that they were started making TV in 2008 after the crash, it, you know, really resonated with audiences. This, like, darker, grittier, longer format in a lot of ways was exactly what was needed.
Yeah, and we also saw sort of the rise of the anti-hero, so sort of protagonists that didn't necessarily show great virtue or characters that were highly flawed, that didn't prescribe to the same sort of popular tropes that we were used to before 2007. An example that this article did use was Olivia Pope. I'm not sure if I buy that one, but... I mean, we love Shonda, so I'm going to...
Shondaland.
Shonda.
Shondaland. Not to mention also that a lot of writers in Hollywood, there was a big writer's strike. Like, it was also an issue of, like, wages and not enough. And there was a lot of heartache over that happening at the same time because people were really just trying to figure out what they were going to do, how they were going to move forward. And the strike lasted for 100 days, and it ended February 9th, 2008. This is all, like, pre the crash, but it was really at a time when TV was changing so much. TV and media, because there was also a director's, you know, strike as well, where Hollywood was changing, and it was just, like, a matter of time before things had to go the way they had to go. So it was a very transitional period, and... people, even at the time, this is what I think is really interesting. People at the time were asking questions like, if people watch TV on their computers, is that still TV or is that something else? Because I don't know about you, Eric, but I almost exclusively watch TV on my computer now. Like, rarely do I go to my TV. And when I do go to my TV, I'm watching it through the internet. You know what I mean?
Yes. And I watch internet videos on TV. I have a Roku stick that lets me watch YouTube on the screen.
Yeah, they're one and the same at this point, which I think is amazing to think that in 2008 people were like, "Oh no, is it going to change?" And like, I totally get that, but it's also a reason why the moving away from network TV was so popular, you know, because it is a different way to approach this whole medium, and it's the part so far that's been more sustainable, you know? It's interesting.
Yeah. I also wanted to mention that people, sort of going back to this anti-hero point, that people, like, they really like flaws in their characters. Like, an example that was used is Don Draper in Mad Men. Like, his alcoholism is, like, very part of the story. But people wanted to see themselves... wanted to see people struggle on TV because that was what they were going through in their real lives.
Totally. Yeah, it was they either wanted to see exactly what you described in Gossip Girl, where it was full escape, where it was like, that's why we saw a rise in escapism and fantasy, like True Blood, like Merlin, like Ghost Adventures, like Murdoch Mysteries. Like, people wanted something Twilight. That was, yes, Sweet Life on Deck. They wanted something that was so far from their reality, or they wanted to see something where they saw like anti-heroes and characters just having a tough time because that's what they were experiencing. And it's also, honestly, it's more interesting storytelling. Sorry. It's just better storytelling.
Oh, for sure.
Like, from an artistic standpoint, whenever you show struggle, it's going to be more interesting. Absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah, it gives more dimension. People more get more dumbness. Invested, and it keeps them on for seasons and seasons, which is why a lot of these shows ran for so, so long.
And then I wanted to briefly touch on music. So, just so people know, Britney Spears is going to be a permanent fixture in this podcast. We are going to have to find an episode where I do not mention her name once.
I feel like that is going to be impossible because it's Britney.
To sort of talk about the pop culture landscape at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And this was largely when Britney Spears was going through her mental health break.
Absolutely.
But what I wanted to point out that was really interesting is that around 2008, 2009, Britney comes back with her Blackout album, which is arguably considered her best work. People say that's probably their favorite Britney album.
Do they really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, it's a very popular thing that people say.
I mean, I guess that makes a lot of sense, but I guess I never
really
thought about it.
It's good. I recently re-listened to it and
yeah.
Highly recommend. But Piece of Me, which is her second single from the album, really becomes her, I don't want to say magnus opus, but it is a song that people really identify with her on. So, like, or identify her with, I should say. So she wins the MTV Video Award for this 1 year after her Gimme More performance scandal. And it later becomes the title of her Vegas residency. It's called The Piece of Me Vegas Residency.
That's right.
And I just wanted to point this out that I think this is a major shifting change in our perception of mental health. I think the world becomes a little bit more compassionate around 2008 because people are all going through struggle at this point. So we can identify more with other people struggling. And I just wanted to point out because, yeah, she wins the MTV Video Awards. People are saying that her music is really, really great in 2008. And I think it just really shows a shift from the 2007 before this when people were hounding her. People were making fun of her.
What was in 2007?
I believe the head shaving event.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So I just wanted to point sort of our cultural landscape around celebrity and also music at this time through Britney because
totally.
We stan.
We stan. Free Britney. Yeah, it's also a time in, like, again, because of the stock market crash, because of a lot of reasons, like, businesses are closing. Businesses are changing. Blockbusters, they're like, sayonara, goodbye. Home video takes a dive. People are like, and what do I need that for? It's also the first annual DVD drop in sales in a decade. Like, DVDs are like almost on the outs. And
that being said, theaters though, like movie theaters,
oh yeah,
like the box office goes up.
Absolutely,
because people are looking for escapism at this time.
Totally. I mean, it's really a good parallel to the Depression era when people, if they could afford it, the way that they would spend their time is they would go to a show. They would go to whatever small pleasures they could to either A, get away from their reality, or B, to have some fun. Because people can't stop. Like, people are not going to stop having fun when things are hard, you know. So the little things, like, yeah, the cost of a movie ticket becomes possible for people, whereas maybe they're not taking, like, big vacations or things like that. And it's also a time when the average American watches 140, I think, 2 hours of TV per month in the last 3 months of the year 2008, which was apparently 5 hours more than the year before, which, like, can relate.
What? Wow.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people were really looking for.
Yeah.
Or something to do.
And I think it also plays in, a lot of folks are out of work. Like, a lot of folks were just home and they had to spend time somehow.
It's like now.
I've
watched almost everything on Netflix because I don't have anything else to do with my life.
Totally.
Because of the dynamic. Mm-hmm. So if you are struggling to understand what it was to be like in 2008, just look around you now. Businesses are closing and we're watching a lot of TV.
Very that. And another thing too is like, at the same time, while things are changing, things are in flux, which I would agree is happening now, that some things are still staying the same. Like the next year in 2009, the best TV show on the face of the earth, in my humble opinion, Parks and Rec premieres. And that is a classic NBC sitcom. Like it is classic, format pretty much. And
But don't you think like a show like Parks and Rec has more commentary on society than, say, like a Frasier or a Friends does?
Oh, I would absolutely say, yeah. It's more in the style of The Office, where it's like everyday people get up to extraordinary things instead of like nothing happens and we're just hanging out a la Seinfeld, which is also one of my favorites. But it is like they do tackle a lot of real world problems, running a not small town, but small town government, essentially. So mm-hmm. I guess you're right in saying that it's a little more maybe relatable that way instead of like these are five friends in a loft in New York City and they're going to be weird and they're going to just, sing a song and maybe they won't, maybe they'll work, maybe they'll sit on a couch drinking coffee all day.
Yeah, I just think Parks and Rec has a little bit more of a commentary. The Office, it has a little bit more of a commentary on modern society than, say, Friends does. I think Friends is really just meant to be enjoyable, where I think there is some intellectual comedy behind Parks and Rec that talked to some of these darker issues that we were seeing in more drama, say like a Shameless or a Breaking Bad.
Totally. And maybe that's why it thrives and survives, you know? Maybe that's why that format is able to still continue today, is because they have to, the content has to adapt. Maybe the format is still okay.
For sure. Well, Miss Carly, that brings us to around 50 minutes into our
wowza.
Podcast.
We can talk.
So, do you got any pop picks before we peace out?
Let me get back into my present day skin. Do I have any pop picks of the week? Well, what have I been up to this week? Can I give my pop pick of the week to an app? Is that weird?
No, not at all.
Okay, I discovered this thing. I knew about it, but I had never used it before, really. I discovered this app called Later, and it's an app that you can schedule your Instagram and social media posts in, so like for your business, essentially, so you don't have to like actually be there scheduling it live. And boy, oh boy, has it like really made things easy on me this week. And I'm obsessed with it. I've made like accounts for everything I possibly can. I just was been going to town. It's so silly, but it's so convenient.
Can I challenge you on that for a second?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Certain apps, Instagram has, third-party apps Instagram has issues with. If you sign up for a third-party app, sometimes Instagram shadow blocks you. We'll bury your content in the algorithm.
Yeah, I know, but it's just for, I don't really care. It's not going to be all my content.
I mean, I don't know. It could be a sponsored third-party app. I've heard that they let some in. But if you have any of those, follow tracker apps, not that I've ever had one of those, it will shadow block you for a while. It makes your content not show up as much. So that's just a warning. Research your apps, friends.
Research your apps. I just know that this is the one that specifically name drop the Hamilton Fringe uses, so that's the reason I'm using it, is because they asked me to. Basically, I'm using it for the Fringe. So but it's made my week a lot easier, though. You know what, who knows, I hadn't really thought about the shadow ban thing, but so if it's not good, I'll bleep the name, but I'm just loving the idea of an app that can help me do my business without me having to do my bills in the ass, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
Yeah, I don't know why Instagram doesn't have that option in its in it. They should just have that. I need it. Instagram, please make that happen so I don't have to have another app.
Well, it is called Instagram.
No, but I want it to be Latergram. They should have a sister app called Latergram where I can schedule it. And then I can post it. But for now, I have to use a third-party app. Instagram, help me. But you can use it also for, like, all, like, social media, basically. Like, Instagram, okay. Facebook, Twitter, and I think Pinterest as well. But, for baby, sure. I ain't posting to Pinterest unless I'm scrolling for days. So, do you have any pop picks of the week, Eric?
I do. So, I'm just going to say my pop pick of the week is Rosé.
Oh.
Just in all forms.
Yes.
In all forms.
Yum, so, yum, yum.
In its first form, the wine. Rosé wine, sparkling.
Pink, pretty.
Brand Ruffiano, Vineyard Ruffiano. It's my favorite. It's Prosecco, but Prosecco can't be pink, so it's just called the Rosé, sparkling Rosé
yep.
from a Prosecco Perfect. Brand. And then, of course, Rosé from Drag Race is killing it.
Classic.
I love
we love a Scottish queen.
Spots videos that are going up on YouTube.
They're
so
the best thing in the world. Yeah.
Mary Queen of Scots goes around New York and does New Yorker things. It's quite funny.
Comedy
and then
gold.
The final rosé is Rosé from Blackpink has released her two songs, her solo debut, which is really cool. And I really enjoy them. If you are somebody that is intimidated by K-pop because maybe you feel the language is a barrier, don't feel that way with these songs because they are in English.
So there you go.
Rosé is actually born in New Zealand and grew up in Australia. She's just ethnically Korean. Not just, but she is ethnically Korean. So she's more of a Western, in her solo material, she's more of a Western artist than a K-pop artist.
Which makes sense for her, yeah.
Yeah, which makes sense for her. And they're really good. I really enjoy her voice. If you are a singing person, Rosé has so much ping in her voice. It's very forward in the mask, which I really appreciate.
And that's very fun.
The sound of her voice.
Very pop. Very fun.
Very pop. I know some people, like I was reading that some people were a little disappointed because it doesn't sound like a Blackpink song. And I was like, but that's
her,
the joy of
it's
it,
her
right?
solo it's stuff, her solo though. Stuff. Like, yeah, the point is that she's supposed to make her own stuff, right?
Yeah, I think some people were disappointed because Jennie's solo stuff sounds like it could be a Blackpink song.
Oh, yeah. So that's kind of what they were expecting.
So, yeah, they were expecting it to be very Blackpink.
I see.
But that's what I think is great. So she gets to do Blackpink-style music when she's in Blackpink.
Yeah.
She gets to do Rosé-style music when she's with Rosé. You get the best of both worlds.
Right.
I really like it.
I guess it's kind of the same thing when people have certain expectations from certain artists. Like, say, this is just off the top of my head. Like, Trixie Mattel doesn't do what you would expect from a drag queen. Like, that's music is not
no,
drag queen music. She's actually just a great musician. Like,
oh, love Trixie Mattel.
So that's my other pop pick. Trixie Mattel. Stan.
Video Games. The Lana Del Rey cover by Trixie Mattel is vibe.
It's our favorite. We love it. Vibe forever.
I think it's better than the original. I'm sorry.
I agree. I don't like Lana Del Rey. I fully agree. If you want to hear Video Games, Trixie Mattel on wherever you listen to your music. It's perfect. It's perfection.
Yeah.
Also, Trixie Mattel just did a cover of, what's that song? Oh,
Blister in the Sun?
Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah. It's
also
really
freaking slaps.
She's so cute. I was supplying for teaching dance and. Mm-hmm. Their warm-up song was Trixie Mattel, was You Got the Look by Trixie Mattel.
Oh,
and I was
perfect.
Just like, yes, I'm not the only person that plays Trixie Mattel in dance class.
You can't help it. It's so good. It's so good.
I also fully play the United King Dolls version of Bing Bang Bong.
UK Han. Bing Bang Bong. It's the best.
Class. And then whenever a whore's voice comes on, I just kind of start talking a little bit louder because it's not the most appropriate.
Just a bit questionable for the BBC and the dance classroom. Oh, incredible. Yeah, we could talk Drag Race all day. That's always a pop pick. That goes without saying.
Oh,
but.
And I just wanted to mention this one Bob the Drag Queen quote about
yes!
Drag Race UK because it was so funny.
It's how we feel about
it. Drag Race UK is so good. That we're starting to call the flagship series Drag Race US.
Drag Race US.
Drag Race and UK Drag Race is US. Better.
incredible. It's just
Bimini.
I've been sent to the moon.
Bimini has my heart, but Bimini has my vote.
Lawrence Chaney is my favorite.
Lawrence,
but Chaney. I need Bimini to win.
Yeah.
Yeah, which makes me a bit bummed for Lawrence Chaney, who's been my front runner all season. But Bimini is just so good. So good. Also, I love Taste. Who doesn't love Taste?
And then not a pop pick, because it's not pop, but I'm really getting into plants, Carly.
I know! I saw that on your Instagram! Tell me more about you and your plant life now. Your plant,
my
plant,
plant
parental
pets.
Life.
So, I have a hibiscus. I have two hibiscuses.
Amazing.
I've cut them and I'm trying to
propagate them.
I'm so nervous about propagating plants.
Tell me how, you have to let me know how it goes.
I will, and I'll give you some of my propagated plants. And then I'm also propagating some ivy. And then I recently bought a nanook plant, which is really pretty. They're purple. They're purple and green stripes. And then a red twist peperomia. So pretty.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
Yeah, I'm becoming... Oh, and I've also bought poppy seeds, and I'm planting poppies in my room.
Aww.
In like little pots.
That's so cute. You're really planting the seeds,
and
literally.
And basil. I'm also doing basil in my room.
Oh, yes, basil's the best.
And I've taken an onion, I've cut it up, but I kept the root, and I'm trying to grow it in water.
Yes. That goes really well. One time I did a bell pepper. Last summer I did bell peppers. I just took the seeds out of a bell pepper.
Right,
yes, it's so good. It works.
Yeah.
I did mine too late. They didn't get to grow very big before it got cold, but.
I bought a table, so like a three-tiered like rolling table, so that I can put my plants on it, and I can roll them into like different areas with sun.
Ah!
And when summer comes too, I can just roll it outside. And roll it back inside.
Your plants are going to be spoiled. That is everything.
Yep. I'm so excited.
See, I got some plants like 2 weeks ago and I love them. And they're still doing great, thank God. But I only got them because my other pop pick is I started to make... I bought like like 20 pounds of polymer clay. And I was like, I should maybe make something with this. So I've been making like weird clay things. So I made some pots. I needed plants for them.
Make me a pot, and then cut off some of your plant and propagate it for me.
Okay.
And we'll trade these.
Okay, I will. I want to make sure I give you a healthy one, though, so I'll figure that out. But yes, I absolutely would love to do that with you.
Love it.
Plant switcheroo.
All right, friend. I think that brings us to the end. We went on a huge tangent there about plants, because
we love plants.
Plants, they save the world.
Plants.
So this has been Before There Were Hashtags. Thanks so much for listening, friends. And we will talk to you next week.
Goodbye!